better. What I want to argue is that we can sensibly ask whether the gravitational field is locally causal, in a sense that's a natural generalization of Bell's original notion of local causality. Not only can we sensibly ask it, not only is it logically well-defined, but there is some theoretical motivation for asking it. And not only that, but there's a possibility, even a likelihood, of being able to address the question in the near future experimentally and definitively resolve it. There's actually the word eventually is crucial for definitively. But it will be possible to carry out interesting experiments, it appears, in the near future that will at least go some way in the direction of addressing the question. So let me give a slide of background here. To run the arguments that I want to run, you need to be willing to take on board some working assumptions. I'm not asking you to believe them as axioms, I'm just asking you to take them as plausible possibilities. So the first is, we don't understand how to unify quantum theory and gravity. There are many fashionable ideas, which have created beautiful mathematics and interesting physical insight. But I think it's fair to say, ultimately, we don't know whether any of the currently popular programs are actually on the right track. That doesn't mean we don't have strong hunches about the way any particular experiment will work out, but it does make it perhaps even more important than it otherwise would to verify those hunches experimentally, if there's even a sliver of doubt about it, if there's even a sliver of theoretical motivation for wondering whether our hunch is right. That's probably the least controversial of these. The second thing I want to assume is that the measurement problem is a real problem, and although it doesn't press upon us any particular way of addressing it, it makes it reasonable to suppose that it might be solved by augmenting quantum theory by what Bell called beables, by some notion of real events, and it makes it reasonable, although certainly not compelling, to suppose that those beables are localized, that the real events take place at definite points, or at least in definite small regions in space-time. Perhaps because they're associated with some sort of localized notion of wave function collapse. So this hypothesis ties in very naturally, or follows very naturally, from the sort of ideas that Philip Pearl described the other day, Tony Leggett also addressed, and/or Frenkel addressed. And I simply want to take it on board as one, something that is worth exploring, something that could possibly be true and whose consequences are interesting to consider. And the third thing I want to assume is that whether or not there is a quantum theory of gravity at scales on the mesoscopic or above, gravity is described essentially classically in the sense that there is a definite object, g mu nu, that corresponds to the space-time metric, and that its geodesics determine the trajectories for masses. And I want to assume that this thing is one of these real quantities, either because it fundamentally is one of the localized variables or real events, or because it's effectively determined by them, whatever they actually are. So, the first assumption is one, essentially, of ignorance. The second is sympathy for localized variables. And the third is belief in the idea that there is some sense in talking about the space-time metric here and the space-time metric here as real quantities. I should say, by the way, this talk is probably going to be slightly shorter than the allotted time. I just want to focus on a few key ideas. And so I'm very happy to take questions during the talk if anything's unclear. Please don't hesitate to ask. Okay. Please. I see. Yes, thank you. No, I don't particularly. I'm not worried about the indeterminism of quantum theory. What I'm worried about is the sample space. What are the things that quantum probabilities are probabilities of? So obviously we have very currently essential verbal prescriptions for that. We know roughly what we mean by a measurement device and the measurement device's outcome, but they're verbal prescriptions. I would like, as Bell and Abner and others have emphasized long ago, I'd like mathematical prescriptions for the things that we're fundamentally talking about when we talk about quantum probabilities. So what could one mean if one asks whether the space-time metric is locally causal? Well, the first thing I should say is I'm greatly indebted here to correspondence and discussion with Faye Dowker, who clarified my ideas on this enormously. The responsibility for any remaining errors is mine, but my debt to Faye is certainly huge on this. I'd like to thank her. I need first two preliminary definitions, which are standard notions in the GR. The first is the notion of a past region. So we have a space-time. A past region is a region so that every point in the region, every time-like geodesic that goes through every point in the region is contained in the region. In other words, the region contains its entire causal past. So roughly speaking, in Minkowski space, if you take those to be light rays, it could be something like this, a cone with the top cut off. In curved space, of course, it's harder to draw these things, but something roughly of that form. And the second notion I need is the notion of a domain of dependence. So I have a region R. Its domain of dependence is the set of points such that every endless past causal curve through the point intersects R. So roughly speaking, if we have a cutoff cone here, the domain of dependence is the completion of the cone there. Okay. And what we're going to be interested in is asking questions about what the probability of the domain of dependence taking a particular form or being isometric to a particular domain is given data about the past region. So slightly more precisely, what I want to address is this quantity, the probability of a region kappa conditioned on data about regions lambda and lambda prime. And this perp implies a condition about the space-like separation of their domains of dependence. So let's go through this. Probability of kappa given lambda perp lambda prime is the probability that lambda's domain of dependence looks like this, looks like kappa. Given that lambda and lambda prime are both realized in the space-time, and given that their domains of dependence are space-like separated. So here's lambda prime's domain of dependence, here's lambda's. These two regions have to be space-like separated. So, and again, I put a question mark here to emphasize that kappa is the thing we're uncertain about. We want to know what the probability of it looking like that is, given all the rest of this stuff. And now you could fill in another bit of this diagram. You could fill in the domain of dependence here. If we do that, we have what I call probability of kappa given lambda perp, lambda prime, semicolon, kappa prime. This is the probability of kappa being here, given lambda being realized, given lambda prime being realized, given that lambda prime's domain of dependence is isometric to kappa prime, and still given that these two domains of dependence are space-like separated. And the key thing that we're interested in is whether the completion of lambda, the probability of the completion of lambda taking a particular form, does not depend on the completion of lambda prime, which is space-like separated, taking a particular form. So we say that a theory, and this may not be a familiar theory, but some theory that defines metrics, perhaps probabilistically, is locally causal if these two quantities are equal. In other words, if the probability of getting kappa here does not depend on the form of kappa prime here. Well, that's essentially the right intuition. But remember, we're talking here about the metrics structure here. So we don't have a quantum theory of gravity. So if we translated all this into matter, we would recover essentially the standard definition of local causality, Bell's definition, and we would conclude that the quantum theory of matter that we have is not locally causal. And that's good. Well, we're coming to that, and I agree that is the standard intuition, but not so fast. Let's take it very carefully, because I think it's worth taking carefully. Okay, but anyway, we have a notion of local causality for a metric theory. So, we've got a natural mathematical condition. A natural question is whether the world that we actually see satisfies that condition or not. Is the metric for our own space-time locally causal? Does the probability of stuff happening here in the metric depend or not on what happened there? And let's notice that there are two well-established theories from which you could draw intuition. One of them is general relativity, and if your intuition is entirely based on general relativity, I think you'd conjecture that the answer must be yes, because in general relativity, in fact, kappa is entirely determined by lambda. Also, kappa prime is entirely determined by lambda prime, but this probability is already determined, and adding extra stuff makes no difference to it. In fact, it's either one or zero in general relativity. But if your intuition is there's some sort of probabilistic theory, or metrics that generalizes general relativity, you would assume that the probability is still going to be determined by the past of the region. On the other hand, general relativity is not the right theory of nature. We know that. I still think it's not stressed often enough and loudly enough that not only is it not the right, it's not just not the right theory because we don't know how to unify it with quantum theory and there must be some breakdown somewhere. But because quantum indeterminacy implies large-scale deviations from general relativity, even in low-energy experiments. And in particular, as Wayne's already pointed out, if we were to extrapolate what we already know about Bell experiments on matter to the gravitational field, our intuition would be that the answer has to be no. We should expect to be able to produce non-locally causal correlations of the metric if we assume that the metric behaves in the same way that we already know that matter does. So again, let me go back to one of the points I started with. It's fine to have very strongly held hunches, but we are uncertain in the end about how quantum theory and gravity are linked. And the right thing to do, the scientifically respectable thing to do, is to test those hunches if we can. And the fact is, we don't actually know the answer for sure, because we've never done a relevant experiment that directly addresses this question. And we have at least a sliver of motivation for wondering about the answer, because we have two highly successful, although both incomplete theories, which give us competing intuitions about what the answer should be. This at least is what I'm trying to persuade. So let's be clear about how one could address this in principle. Now, I need to carry out a trick here. I need to rotate, it says. Oops. So how ideally would you address this question? Well, the answer's really, really quite simple. What you would want is a standard Bell CHSH experiment, let's say using a source of entangled photons. You would want quantum random number generators here that tell you which axis to carry out your measurement. Let's say a choice between these two in the CHSH basis, and another one here to tell you which choice to carry out here. Say one of these two. And then you want to amplify up the data you've generated to the gravitational field by moving a lump of matter to one place or another. And we actually have two bits of data here. 1 + 1 = 2 bits. One bit of data is the choice of the axis, and the other bit is the outcome of the measurement. And so what we would want in this idealized version of the experiment is the possibility of moving a lump of matter to one of four places. 1, 2, 3, 4, and here it is. It's decided to sit at point 4 on this run. And similarly over here, it gets amplified up and sits one of these four places, and here it's at number 1 as it happens. And now to complete the investigation, be absolutely sure that we're testing what we think we're testing. We want some device, perhaps a Cavendish torsion balance, that directly measures the gravitational field corresponding to the mass distribution and is able to discriminate between these four locations. And it does so over here. And then a similar device over here that discriminates between these four. And we want all of this process over here to be in this purple region here, over here to be in this region here. And it's crucial that these regions should be space-like separated. So we have a tough task for the experimentalists here. They have to not only carry out a measurement, but amplify it up and then measure the gravitational field and do all that quickly enough on the two wings that they still maintain space-like separation for the entire region. It's macroscopic here. Yeah. So what, if we did the ideal experiment, time to re-rotate. Today, what answers will we get? Well, I think it's fair to say the standard intuition, and it's quite a strong intuition, is the following. We already know that Bell CHSH experiments produce non-local correlations. We expect that those non-local correlations in the photon measurements will be faithfully translated to non-local correlations in the matter distributions, and that the measurements of the gravitational field will again faithfully translate so that we observe non-local correlations in the gravitational field, and we conclude that the gravitational field does indeed violate local causality. And if that's right, then so much the worse for the geometric intuitions that we drew from general relativity. They're just disproven. Now, certainly it's logically possible, until you do the experiment, that something else could be observed. And another logical possibility is that we find that when we do things this way, when we take a Bell CHSH experiment and couple it to matter and then measure the gravitational fields, we find that we just don't see non-local correlations. We thought we did before in standard Bell CHSH experiments, but when we do it this way, we don't. If that were to happen, well, first, let's agree, it would be a very, very big surprise. It would give us evidence, it wouldn't be conclusive, but it would be pretty damn interesting evidence, suggesting that the gravitational field does indeed respect local causality. Hooray for GR-based intuitions, but in flat contradiction with the predictions of quantum theory. It really would be a very, very startling result. There are even weirder logical possibilities. I think this one is weird enough that I'll stick with this one. But you could imagine other things that could happen as well. What I want to do, though, is persuade you that there's some motivation, enough motivation to do the experiment and see whether the standard intuition is confirmed or one alternative, at least, for instance, this one, could possibly be realized. So that's the question. Is it actually worth doing this experiment? Well, first, obviously, we have to agree logically possible is not a good way of motivating something. It's logically possible that if you do a Bell experiment and then call up your mother and tell her the results of the experiment, you get different results from if you don't. It's logically possible that if you paint the detectors a different color and do the experiment, it makes a difference. But those are silly and uninteresting hypotheses. Is this one in the same class or not? Well, I'd like to offer a couple of reasons, and there may be others, but let me at least offer you these two. A couple of reasons why I think it's not in the same class and the experiment is worth doing. So the first one we've already touched on. There is a genuine tension between the intuitions we draw from general relativity and quantum mechanics. And you could, and we don't know how that tension was resolved, and we don't really know the boundary line on one side of which quantum mechanics wins and on the other side of which general relativity wins. And you could, one way that people have speculated that it might be resolved is some sort of hybrid theory in which there's a stochastic classical theory of the metric that's linked by some sort of stochastic equations to a quantum theory of the matter field. And you could, if you were trying to write down such a theory, which is admittedly hard, and you were looking around for sort of plausible axioms to put into the theory, local causality is not such a ridiculous choice. It doesn't seem an unreasonable axiom at the level of writing down equations to postulate for a theory of this type. The second line of thought that I think gives at least a sliver of motivation is a more general possibility, and this is one that Tony Leggett already addressed the other day, but let me recapitulate. It's the possibility that it's a quite general fact about nature, although one that we've completely missed so far, that space-like separated beables, space-like separated real events, actually do not have non-local correlations. And if that were true, then, and we buy the initial set of working assumptions, in particular it would follow that the space-time metric, being a special case of real events, would obey local causality. It doesn't have non-local correlations because nothing real has non-local correlations. How could that possibly be, given all the experimental data we have? Well, it could possibly be for the following reason. Here's a standard Bell experiment, in which the measurements are carried out over here. And on the standard way of reasoning, the points at which the photons enter the measuring devices are space-like separated. And so we conclude that we have space-like separated measurements. However, we do not have a theory of real events associated with collapse or otherwise, at least not, we don't have a unique candidate theory. We don't know what the right theory is, if there is any right theory. And it's perfectly plausible, from what we know so far, that what actually happens, would happen in such analysis, is that everything here and here is still at the quantum level, the data collation is still at the quantum level, and earliest real events occur back here once the data have been brought together and are not space-like separated. And if that's happening in all the experiments that we've done to date, you can imagine that you would get a different outcome if you ensured by amplifying up the measurements to the macroscopic level in space-like separation regions that the real events were actually space-like separated. So if you do something like the experiment I've just described, this is at the quantum level, this is at the quantum level, but we force everything up to the macroscopic level over here and over here still space-like separated. We force real events to take place at space-like separated regions. And we could, one could imagine, we find an absence of non-local correlations in the proposed experiment. Now again, I'm not saying there is more than a sliver of a motivation for this. I'm not saying one expects this, by no means. But there is a sliver of motivation. There is a loophole that, until recently at least, hasn't been generally explicitly acknowledged in all the Bell experiments we've done to date. One might call it the collapsed locality loophole. And the idea is that one's picture of nature is something like this, that localized collapse events occur from time to time, governed by some set of equations, and the effect of the collapses propagates only forwards in time and at light speed. So a localized event occurs here, the effect propagates there, another one here, the effect propagates there, and these two things don't see each other, and so their results do not depend on each other, so long as they're space-like separated. And that's, I don't want to press this very far, but it's a little more than a logical possibility. There is, in fact, a consistent, although very strange, alternative to standard quantum theory, which has precisely this property, and so which would agree with quantum theory in Bell experiments in which the collapses are not space-like separated, but would completely disagree with quantum theory in Bell experiments in which the collapses are space-like separated. I've set this out in the paper that Tony Leggett mentioned the other day, Physical Review A 72, blah, 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 which is also on the archive back in 2002. I think that's probably right, although nobody's gone through that. But I think from something like possible parameters in GRW Pearl theories, indeed, that's likely to be the conclusion. Yeah. Absolutely, yes. So it completely depends on what your theory of real events, collapse-based or otherwise, actually is. But for some plausible versions of that idea that are out there, I think the conclusion is yes, that's probably indeed the case. Okay. So is it possible to do the experiment that I just set out? Well, it may. I'm not the best person to ask. I'm not an experimentalist. But it does begin to seem that doing the ideal version may be difficult at the moment. Even if you could push a Bell experiment up to, say, 100 kilometers separation, you still have less than a millisecond in order to both create your macroscopic distinct gravitational fields and measure them by macroscopic devices. However, it looks more hopeful that one can at least do interesting experiments in this direction. And in particular, Nicolas Gissin and his group have been working on an implementation of a simpler version of the experiment in which distinct gravitational fields, and one can argue whether they're macroscopically distinct or not, it depends on your criteria, but plausibly macroscopically distinct gravitational fields are created in space-like separated regions. They're not, at least in the experiment currently contemplated, as I understand it, they're not likely to be measured directly, but they're going to be created. And that wouldn't definitively resolve the question, but that would already give you a different prediction according to some versions of the intuition I outlined. So, and the rough idea, as I understand it, and it's seems to me a very beautiful idea, is that one takes a signal directly from the photodetector, so we have a little electrical pulse here, and it goes into a piezoelectric crystal, and the crystal deforms. So if you get a photon click, the signal comes along, and the crystal deforms. It sort of squashes, elongates this way and squashes that way. And this is not an insubstantial thing, this crystal. And it has every right to think of itself as macroscopic. And the difference between the two configurations also is a macroscopic distinction. So this happens on both wings. Ideally, it should happen twice, once for the measurement choice and once for the measurement outcome, for two different crystals on both wings. And if this beautiful idea can be brought to implementation, and there seems to be optimism that it can be done, even perhaps in the near future, it will allow some tests, although not yet totally definitive tests, of the essential motivating idea, at least for some plausible intuitions about gravity-related collapse. And I'm very excited by the possibility of seeing this implemented experimentally. I think it'd be wonderful. Even if we get the result we all expect, and the betting must be overwhelming that we do, at least we know for sure something that we didn't know for sure about the properties of the gravitational field. So just to summarize, 3 points. First one, there is a well-defined notion of local causality for metric space-time theories, which extends Bell's definition for theories of matter-based events in Minkowski space. Second point, at least in principle, it's an open question whether gravity is or is not described by a locally causal theory, though we have a strong standard intuition that it is not. However, there is at least a sliver of motivation for considering the possibility that the standard intuition just might possibly be wrong. And third, in principle, the question can be definitively resolved by experiment. And in practice, some very interesting experiments in this direction, even if they won't be completely definitive, appear feasible in the near future. Thanks very much. There are a range of intuitions out there from Penrose and Joshi and Caroline Harzi and collaborators and others about how gravity could be connected to collapse and what constitutes a macroscopic, two macroscopically distinct gravitational fields. I don't want to push any particular one of those proposals as a favorite. But it's good to know that there are interesting proposals out there. What I would say is what would be something that everybody should agree constitutes macroscopic distinct gravitational fields? I would say it's something that you can actually take a macroscopic device and get a macroscopic deflection from. So if we have matter, the possibility of two different matter configurations, we can actually directly measure the gravitational fields by devices with springs and balls, and we can see a deflection that goes here or there. That may be far more than you actually need to do. It almost certainly is far more than you actually need to do according to these various criteria, but it should be sufficient. And so if you want to just nail down the question for good, that seems like a good way of nailing it down. That's at least my tentative opinion. That would be nice, yes. Let me disclaim any experimental competence, but my very dim understanding is one strong constraint becomes something like the speed of sound in whatever you're trying to do. You have a you're trying to make something macroscopic move rather fast, and you have to actually get the shot to propagate along the whole thing. And if you have an already macroscopic object, the time for the sound wave even to travel from one end to the other is much longer than the nanoseconds that you're talking about. Is that? You've got a lot more than nanosecond, yeah. So I'm not saying it's not doable. I have no idea whether it's doable or not. It'd be nice for somebody more competent to address it. Yes. I think that's right, that the sort of ideas that Andrew talked about, that Roger Carolehazy, are one interesting line of motivation for this sort of experiment. I have not thought in detail about their criteria. I was very interested in listening to the talk. And I think I and anybody else who's interested clearly should think in much more detail about that. But I agree with the spirit of the question. Well, wild ideas are good. You could do that. I'm not sure you have to do anything that complicated. Because if one could extract from those ideas a definite statement about when two gravitational fields are distinct enough to cause collapse, you could do the test directly without needing to give Abramian motion. But anyway, it would be good to think about that and get the numbers straight. Absolutely. Well, I just had in mind something like a Cavendish experiment. So you have a lump of lead here, and you have a torsion balance that directly measures the gravitational field from that lump of lead, and it's sensitive enough that you can actually see the macroscopic deflection, depending whether the lead's here or it's not here. Well, I guess, yeah, you're assuming essentially that the background space-time is approximately Minkowski and all that, indeed, yeah. And that is already classical in, yes. Yeah. There's, you have something at the back of your mind here, I could tell. I think it is, yes. Well, two things. So it's a consequence of quantum mechanics plus some intuition about how gravity couples to quantum matter. Or it would be a consequence of quantum gravity if we had a quantum theory of gravity. The other thing is, I agree with essentially with what you say, but of course it is crucial that you can actually demonstrate non-local correlations in the experiment. It's not enough just to have entanglement and collapse it in some fixed way on both sides. You need to have a possibility to carry out different measurements. But given that, yes, indeed, this is one simple way to remind ourselves again that quantum theory and general relativity just flatly contradict each other.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think I'm not expert enough on K-meson decay to understand that part of the argument properly. But are you saying that you think quantum field theory is already inconsistent with quantum mechanics? but the total four momentum will be conserved in the decay. But the four momentum will be conserved in the decay. Sorry, Is this addressing Dan's point or the earlier? Yeah, I think I'm on your side with that, but I don't really want to intervene. Maybe you. I certainly agree with that. Yeah. Thank you.